Hi, I'm Simon Campbell.
And I'm Susie Starlight of the Starlight Campbell Band.
Welcome to the Super Rocking Supertone Show!
Come on.
Deep Purple and Highway Star from their double live album, Made in Japan. I don't want to speak anymore.
Rolling Stone magazine said that was the sixth best live album in the world ever recorded. It's number one. The Rolling Stones are idiots. They need their ears cleaning out and actually sorting out. That is probably the most exciting track I've ever heard on record. The most exciting. It explodes. Blackmore, when he comes in, and it comes, and he plays that big open chord, you think, halt, and then, and at the end, he's giving that tremolo so much wong and wang, and the tight, how tight are they?
It's incredible.
Ian Paice is, you know, he's so underrated, Ian Paice, he really is, because you know, people always talk about Bonham, but listen to that, his drumming is superb. And every member of that band are just brilliant because they are a band, but with exceptional players. Because Richie Blackmore, I mean, you know, he's certainly up there in my top three or four guitar players. And on this track, he's probably the favourite, you know. And I've resisted playing this track. We've done, this is show 73, and we did about 20 before that when we were doing our produce series. You know, so it's nearly 100 shows, and I've resisted playing it because I'm too excited. It's incredible. And you know something, before we carry on, you know what he's using on that?
What?
He's not messing around with a little practice amp or a little couple of amps down there. He's got some Marshall Majors 200 watt amps, right?
Yeah.
And he's using Range Masters, which is basically a fuzz, like the Supertone one that we've got, we developed. And that is not quiet. The Hammond is not through a sissy Leslie, not two Leslies, not five Leslies, but Marshall stacks on full. And it sounds like they're going to catch fire any moment, which they probably did. Roger Glover on bass is grinding every note. Pace is keeping it all together. Gillan's screaming his ghoulies off. But everything's in tune. Right. Now, let's look at the research.
No, that's it. You know, sometimes the whole thing about the research, though, is just to guide you and just to give you a context. I do know it was released with a special offer price of £3.10 back in the day. And that's the same price as a single LP, and it went to number 16 in the charts. But what I like about this as well, because we've just recently recorded a live album, and I'm not comparing us to Deep Purple. What I'm doing about the experience of when you know in your mind you're being recorded, it does change your psyche slightly, regardless of how relaxed you are. You'll know you're recording.
You do.
Now, what happened with these guys, because they're Japanese, the record label wanted them to record a live album. They weren't really that bothered, yeah? So this is what I love about their freedom in their approach to this album, is that they weren't bothered. They weren't particularly interested in it. They had an 8-track recorder that they had this engineer, Martin Birch, who they insisted he oversaw the live production.
Well, Martin Birch, of course, worked with Wishbone Ash and Derek Lawrence, so we know about all that, who produced the first couple of albums and my little brother album.
Crikey, this is so family, isn't it? Yeah. So close. Martin it's almost
Birch.
Like, you know.
Anyway, go on, sorry.
They're sat in the living room, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. They're
stick
here.
The kettle on, love.
Yeah.
But so they've got Martin there, but they didn't think on first sight that the equipment they'd hired in was going to do the job. So they recorded, they had a couple of gigs and they recorded a couple of sessions. So, and there were no overdubs. This is a thing, but it was because they didn't care about being recorded that it wasn't in their psyche, so they just played normally. They were more interested in doing a great gig and not thinking about the sound being perfect.
Well,
they just were in the moment.
Well, they recorded, though. They recorded a few shows.
They
I think
did.
That helps.
That's right.
You know that if you cock up a track on what... But this whole album, and it is done from a few different shows.
Yeah.
But, you know, Smoke on the Water from this record is the definitive one because I... You know something? I do not like the studio albums. I think they stink.
Well, they're a bit sterile.
They are. They're not like this. This is Deep Purple at the finest, where they just don't burst. It's like the Incredible Hulk bursting out of his shirt, you know, when he goes green.
It's like the Faces, though. I love the Faces for that live feel, you know, when they fall into a groove sort of thing, you know. But they do. But they see all that. But it's all about being alive and being actually, I think, in the... It makes me, transports me to that moment where I'm there in front of them at a live gig, I think that's the main thing. And that's what the, that's what I enjoy, like you, the most recorded albums I like or music is when it sounds live, like there's a human attached to it, that it's not being sterilized and the breath's taken out, you know, and tweaked and
fuddled. It's 8-track, folks, 8-track. You know, we've now got 500 tracks, and I've not heard a live album sound like this because they just don't play like this anymore. They can't do it. People cannot do it. They can't do it.
But also, there's a bit of improvisation as well, wasn't there? So it kept it fresh as well and alive because you never know what they're going
to
do.
Well, the interesting thing about Purple is that what they didn't tend to do, I mean, on some of them, like Space Trucking, they had these huge extended, you know, half an hour, and half of one of the sides of Men in Japan, I think side 4, is Space Trucking just on its own.
Yeah.
And it's huge amount of, but that track there is clearly rehearsed, and, you know, because all the parts are set pieces, in terms of the length of the solos and stuff.
Yeah.
And Blackmore bases that solo upon the stuff he did in the studio. So what he's doing is playing bits of his recorded thing and then just moving outside it and extemporizing all that stuff. It's like, because that is, that's very similar to the studio, but yeah, it's amazing. So if you haven't got the full album, you must buy it immediately.
Well, they were saying that, you know, obviously because the studio version was called Machine Head, wasn't it? But the live in Japan, that's it. That is it.
That's right. Well, that was the one where they did Smoke in the Water, recorded on the rolling trucks, mobile thing, Stones trucks, mobile.
Wow.
Yeah, and all that, you know, and the Smoke in the Water from the casino.
I really like Deep Purple. I think when I listen back to this track, it makes me love them even more because I don't realise how much I really like them, but I realise now that I really like them.
Well, you were rocking out there.
I was? But I really like them, but I didn't know that I really, really like them.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's it. Next.
$6 in my hand. Up to Lexington, 125. Feel sick and dirty, more dead than alive. I'm waiting for my man. Hey, white boy, what you doing? It's furthest from my mind. I'm just looking forward to different in my mind. I'm waiting for my man. He comes, he's all dressed in black. He wore shoes and a big straw hat. Taste. All then you gotta spit because you got no time to waste.
Velvet Underground. I'm waiting for the man. First released on the 1967 album, The Velvet Underground, and Nico, released on Verve Records. You've always got to go Nico when you spin to Nico.
Why is that?
I don't know. I just made it up.
All right, then, like Gargrave.
Yeah, like Gargrave. And we're broadcasting currently from Yorkshire, North Yorkshire.
We are indeed, because we're mobile.
Yeah, we've been staying at our youngest son, Joe, and Christina's house, and it is amazing. We've been there for
a few weeks now. We're like kids, though. We're in the conservatory with the door closed, with all our setup and everything, all our guitars and recording equipment. Yeah, and it feels like kids in the den, doesn't it?
They've been great, haven't they? They really looked after us.
And great, you know, and the thing is though, Joe's really interested in the music side as well, because he was the one that put a request in. You know, when we first played Zappa?
That's right,
great,
yeah.
Googly Moogly.
Yeah.
And so he's really into his music as well, which is fantastic, because he was always like saying, what about that? Have you played this? And he loves it. And it's great. And it's lovely to see that his love, your love of music in our son as well. You
but
know,
what's really cool about it?
Very
I think
similar.
It, yeah, thank you. And I think what's really cool about it is that they've been so gracious, so loving. It's difficult when you get a couple of rock and roll musicians and two hounds
yes,
turning up
true.
At your house and sort of just camping, you know, in your house for a few weeks. But we're off to Germany.
We are. We're going to Deutschland. Yes.
Yeah. So we're going out there and spending some time out there and reopening our studio and stuff to record our next record.
Yeah.
The Language of Curiosity.
Yeah, it's very exciting actually, because we've got a new Dutch agent with Bepop agency with Ed, and so we're getting Dutch festivals and Benelux festival bookings in with him, and we're talking to other German promoters now, so it's great to be there. And we met Phil Shuckleton the other night, who's a British guy who lives he lives an hour away from where we're going to be living.
It's amazing.
It's fantastic, and it's proper music family. I feel so, do you know when everything feels right? It's serendipity. Everything feels right.
It does. It's amazing. You know, I'm really happy, and I feel special about it. You know, it's a really cool thing. Anyway, talking of special, what about the Velvet Underground?
Well, see, I really like Lou Reed. You know, I keep my vocabulary isn't very wide today. I really, really like. There's something about Lou Reed that really inspires me. He seemed such. I think I was inspired by his love for Laurie Anderson. I think that really melted me, and I loved him for loving her, and I loved the way they loved each other.
Yeah.
And then when you go back and you look at the Velvet Underground, you know that he's that guy, you know. It's just that I didn't know him. And he's writing stuff and just documenting things and life in New York City, you know. So.
And this is about his drug dealer, isn't it? Or a drug dealer?
It's about somebody waiting on a street corner in Harlem, and they've got like $26 on them. They're going to buy some white stuff, basically some illegal drugs, as it were. But it's about life in the city. Mm. And I think that's what, you know, Lou Reed's very good at documenting, is he wrote about what he saw around him.
But he had a unique voice. So New York. I mean, the thing. Every time I think about the Velvet Underground, I immediately think about New York, principally.
Yeah.
And then, of course, Andy Warhol, who produced the track.
Yeah. And do you remember when we watched Andy Warhol? Though he's that was quite a complex twist of stories with Andy Warhol.
Yeah, and remember when we were in Valencia. And, what's his name? The artist who met him, and he said he was a bit of an asshole.
Oh, that's right.
Enrique.
He's like a classic kind of artist,
yeah,
isn't he, Enrique?
Yeah, brilliant artist.
He was around at the clubs at that time, wasn't he?
Yeah.
And he said, he was around, because they were all in the club scene at that point. Yeah, he did say he was a bit of an asshole.
But the interesting thing about this track, though, is that, you know, because Lou Reed really came to prominence when David Bowie and Mick Ronson, a.k.a. Ronno, recorded Transformer.
Yeah.
And then you listen to this, and then you listen to We Could Be Heroes. Do, 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 do. It's virtually the same.
Just from one day.
it's virtually the same tempo.
Yeah.
And it is clearly, been remangled and reformed and refashioned into Heroes. Because it's like, it's two chords all the way through. And I know, you know, the Bowie stuff is, but Bowie was a master. At actually plagiarising stuff.
Collating.
Plagiarising. And then And then,
yeah, it's true.
And then just putting sunglasses on it and a schnurrbart.
Yeah, that's moustache in German, by the way.
I'm just showing off my German.
Yeah. Favorite. It's good, yeah. There's a schnurrbart.
And, and putting a glass of moustache on it to make it look different and sound different, but with the basis in that, you know?
Yeah.
And, but it, I mean, there's nothing wrong with that at all. I mean, people have been doing it. The Beatles were terrible. They were the worst ones, I think, out of all of them.
I think what you realise is that everybody was up to something.
Everybody's talking at me. I don't hear words they're saying. Only the echoes of my mind. People stopping, staring. I can't see their faces. Only the shadows of their eyes. I'm going where the sun keeps shining through the pouring rain. Going well, the weather suits my clothes. Banking off of the northeast winds, sailing on summer breeze. And skipping over the ocean like a stone. My clothes, banking off of the northeast winds, sailing on summer breeze, and skipping over the ocean like a stone. Everybody's talking at me, can't hear a word they're saying, only the echoes of my mind. I won't let you leave my love behind. No, I won't let you leave.
Harry Nilsson and Everybody's Talking from his third album, Aerial Ballet, and that was released in July 1968 on the RCA Victor label.
The album was named after a high wire circus act of his grandparents, apparently.
Aerial Ballet.
Well, there we are. You know, Harry Nilsson, everybody thinks about Without You, and this track he didn't write, but he was principally a songwriter.
Yeah.
And, you know, John Lennon loved him, didn't he?
Yeah, they were interviewed, apparently, and they said, who's your favourite actor? And went, Nilsson. That was it. They were really good friends, him and Ringo.
Well, you know...
As well.
This, you know, Midnight Cowboy, because that's where it's from, isn't it?
It was used. This is the weirdest thing about how it didn't actually... It flopped in the US when it was released initially. So it reached the top 40 in Canada, but it had a change of fate when it was chosen to be featured in the film Midnight Cowboy with John Voight and Dustin Hoffman. The film got nominated... Well, it won an Oscar, and it became there, and it transformed it into one of his biggest hits. It was in the top 10 in 1969. So it flopped and then it got in a film and then it was a huge success. That's it. Well, how weird is that, though?
Well, you know the thing is? It really makes me ill, you know, because, I mean, you get... And there must be so much music like this that's lurking. And we try and dig quite a bit of it out if we can. You know, that's not been recognised, but really is amazing.
Mm.
And it's just the fact that it's you know, it's not come out at the right time, it's not commercially right. You know, I mean, we talk about Bowie a lot with this, you know, with Lodger and all those albums. And afterwards, everybody goes, oh, these are great records, you know. But at the time, everybody, the critics slated them, And it's only later on that they go back and say, oh, yes, but this was a masterpiece.
Exactly.
And, you know.
They did that with the Velvet Underground. It was was critically a flop, but all of their stuff, really. And the same with this song. And it's true, but it's almost context. I'm wondering, because music's the soundtrack to our life.
Mm.
And then if you release something and it doesn't quite hit, it's not listened to in a certain environment or a certain context, then it doesn't connect the same. Whereas when you've got that in the film, people loved the characters, loved a scene, obviously, with it in, and they went, oh, my God, you know, and the real life and the music melted together and it became meaningful. And I think that's a problem with music, is that you've got to actually make it part of your life and has to have a story attached to it. Mm. There has to be some human connection for music to have meaning, I think.
Yeah.
And that's potentially what I think why we have those situations. There's just nothing going on, or it hasn't been part of a scene. Or, you know, because you always remember, you know, when you've got a song and it's, you know, you break up with your first partner or something, you know, like your boyfriend when you're about 12, 14. I was 15, actually.
Blimey.
Anyway, we're talking about Nilsson don't just look at me like that. It's very funny. But yeah, so what I love about Nilsson, though, because you wouldn't believe that, because when you listen to his tone then, have you noticed it's a bit honky? A bit nasally.
Yeah.
But it was quite, and it was double tracked as well.
Yeah.
So it was,
at the end, I didn't like the double tracking at the end.
It's a bit odd.
A bit too much.
Just on the production, I was, but you only really notice it when you've got your headphones on, that you kind of go, it's a bit like, you know, a bit nasal, as it were. But they would do say about him that he's one of the few major pop rock recording artists of his time to achieve significant commercial success without really performing major public concerts or going on regular tours. So, and it was saying that I think he connected as well, because he had this kind of defiant attitude. It was like, and his songwriting, it was like a touchstone for later generations of indie rock musicians. So that's where he sort of sits in terms of... Because he used to write as well, you know, he used to write songs, and when he started out, and like the Monkees recorded them and stuff. So, I mean, he's a prolific songwriter.
Yeah, and he must have made a lot of cash, I would have thought. But it always reminds me, this track always reminds me of Glen Campbell. And
You're right!
It could be Glen Campbell.
And
I listened to it, and I actually thought it was Glen Campbell when I first started, I'm sure, you know, but then, you know, you obviously find out. Now, wasn't Nilsson part of, with John Lennon, part of this thing called a Hollywood Vampires Drinking Club?
Yeah, that's weird, isn't it?
Yeah, which is a little loft in the Rainbow Bar and Grill in LA.
Yeah, well, it was started by Alice Cooper. It was a drinking club, yeah, Hollywood Vampires. And in order to be inaugurated, to actually be accepted into the group, you've got to outdrink everyone in the room.
Well, in the Rainbow Bar and Grill, now I'm going to get pulled a bit, I think I'm wrong, it's not the Lemmy. Is that where he hung out, the Rainbow Bar and Grill? I think it was, you know. I do actually think as well that that Thin Lizzy mentions it somewhere as well, the Rainbow Bar and Grill, in one of their songs. I might be totally wrong here, because I'm sure it's Bar and Grill, though.
That's interesting. Let's check it out.
In Hollywood, yeah.
We'll play this song and then we'll validate it afterwards, because we're recording live.
Yeah, but the members besides those two were Alice Cooper, Keith Moon, Ringo Starr, Mickey Dolenz, and of course Harry Nilsson. So.
And of course, and if you were in town, you could be an honourable member. That's when John Lennon rocked up with Keith Emerson or John Belushi, Mark Bolan,
Joe Walsh.
I know.
Oh, blimey, it was a bit of a, you know, you can imagine a miscreant den of vice and
can
general
I just tell
nonsense.
You that I think you and I would have fitted in quite perfectly.
Everybody get on your feet. You make me nervous when you're in your seat. Take off your shoes and pat your feet. We doing a dance that can't be beat. We barefootin'. We barefootin'. We barefootin'. We barefootin'. Went to a party the other night. Long tall Sally was out of sight. Threw away a wig and her house sneakers too. She was doing a dance without any shoes. She was barefootin'. She was barefootin'. She was barefootin'. She was barefootin'. Hey, little girl.
song. I bet you can barefoot all night long. Take off your shoes and throw them away. Come back and get them another day. We barefootin'. We barefootin'. We barefootin'. We barefootin'. Everybody get barefooted. Take off your shoes. John Henry, he said to Sue, if I barefoot, would you barefoot too? Sue told John, I stir your stew. I was barefooting ever since I was two. It was barefooting. It was barefooting. It was barefooting. We barefooting. We barefooting. We barefooting.
You're listening to The Supertone Show with Susie Starlight and Simon Campbell of the Starlight Campbell Band.
And that was Robert Parker and Barefootin', released a single in 1965 on NOLA Records. Sold over a million copies and went to number 2 in the US R&B charts, 7 on the Billboard Hot 100 and 11 in the Cashbox Top 100 in June 1966.
Also got to number 24 in the UK singles chart.
Well, Wilson Pickett did a version of it, didn't
he? Yeah, but I've never heard of Robert Parker.
No. Well, I thought it was Wilson Pickett until we looked into it.
Exactamente.
That's right, because we were going to play, which we've got a copy of the vinyl, of course, the Wilson Pickett version, but we thought we'd do the original for a change.
Of course.
Because we should have.
It's got a history, though. I mean, Robert Parker, it's Mr. New Orleans. He's just got this incredible history. He started off as a sax player. And I love this story, playing with a guy called Professor Longhair.
Of course.
I know.
Your man.
And yeah, so he played on the Mardi Gras New Orleans hit. That was back in 1949.
No.
Yeah. And he used to work with Fats Domino. I love this. Huey Piano Smith. Irma Thomas. And then in 1958, started a recording, a solo recording thing in the career. And he had a local hit with an instrumental called All Night Long. And then he signed to NOLA Records and had his biggest hit with Barefootin'. Sold over a million copies. And what it does is it evokes a picture, doesn't it, of that time. This song has a feel, it has a smell to it.
Yeah, it does. But more than that, I think what it does, it has a feel, but it actually casts an image in your mind because the video is very well regarded as well. And that, the dance, this barefooting thing, you know, it was connected with the whole scene at that time. We talk about scenes a lot, but this must have created a scene. Like you get all those ridiculous dancing records where people do crazy dances to them, you know. There's that Taiwanese guy or something who recently had that.
That's right.
Ridiculous.
Oh, that's interesting.
Then recently I saw that, was it a Russian video where they were doing a dance as well? But people connect that with the song. But I mean, there's no doubt that this is a great song. And what I love that baritone sax. Whoa, 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 whoa. Right, you know. I just love it.
It's well placed.
Yeah, and also, it's just slightly too loud in the mix.
Yeah.
But it's not. But, you know, if you were doing it now, you'd say, oh, I'll turn that down a little bit, you know. But, of course, they didn't, because what they used to do is position everybody in the studio so they were just the right distance from the mic. And he was probably getting a bit...
Excited.
He was probably thrusting his sax a bit close to the mic.
Well, do you know what I found out? I never knew about this. There's a guy, and he was known as the Creole Beethoven, I don't know how I'm going to pronounce his name. Wardell Quezerg. It's Q-U-E-Z-E-R-G-U-E. Quezerg.
I was going to mention him, but I couldn't pronounce
it. Yeah, no. I thought I'd give it a go, you know. We're always like that wherever we go in the world, don't we? We always try, and there's always sign language, but because we're doing an audio-based show, we can't really do the sign language to get by. But
indeed.
So anyway, Wardell formed NOLA Records, so you've got this whole New Orleans history there. And the reason why as well we wanted to play this is because we were at a special place on Monday night.
We were indeed. We were at the Barnoldswick Music and Arts Centre, which is run by a very good friend of ours called Peter Barton. Yeah. He owns it and he puts bands on. And on a Monday night, it gets packed. And the other, and we were there on Monday and we were seeing Danny Handley. Danny Handley was playing with a bass player called Roberto. Who we know. I can't remember his second name. Sorry, Roberto. But it was a great evening. It was packed. Everyone was enjoying themselves. And also there was our new friend, Phil Shackleton.
Yes.
Who we met...
on the weekend.
Yeah, on Saturday night.
Well, I met him for the first time.
Yeah, with Bruce and Fiona, one of our big pals. We stayed over there and played some guitar. And he's got this lovely Martin. And he's a fabulous... If you ever get a chance to go and see him... He doesn't do a lot of recorded stuff, but Phil Shackleton, he's a fabulous... acoustic guitar player, and he knew John Martin very, very well.
And used to hang out, didn't they?
Yeah, and also Hamish Imlach, who's Fiona's dad, the late great. And I think didn't we open the series of shows with
the cod liver oil and the orange juice?
We did.
Liver oil and the orange juice. So I love that song.
Yeah, so I think that number 18 or whatever it was that when we started this series, it started with that track.
Well, so what was beautiful as well, and this is what music family is all about. So we obviously Fiona and Bruce are beautiful friends of ours. Hamish is Fiona's father, and then we meet Phil, and we sit around, we're jamming, we've had a beautiful curry. So Fiona cooks curries just like a dad used to.
Yep.
And Bruce is just fantastic company as well. We're all giggling, chatting, but the stories are told as if you say, "I'll stick the kettle on." There's no ego. It's just life, and Phil's so down to earth. And he's a great storyteller. We're all down to earth and we're real people just sharing stories and laughing our pants off at different comedic events that have happened. And you just feel like family. And that's really what it's all about.
May you never lay your head down without a hand to hold. May you never make your bed. Like a great and strong brother of mine, you know that I love you true. You never talk dirty behind my back, and I know that it's those that do. Oh, please, won't you be rid of mine? Love is a lesson to learn in our time. Oh, please, won't you be rid of mine? Temper, if you get in a bar room fight.
John Martin, and May You Never from his fourth studio album, Solidaire, that was released in February 1973 by Island Records. He was the first guy non-reggae signing by Chris Blackwell from Island, John Martin.
Well, our mate Phil Brown worked with him quite a lot, but this was produced, not on this one, because it was recorded at Sound Technique Studio, the mighty Sound Technique Studio, produced by John Wood, who's a big mate of our friend Andy Seward's, of course, so more music family.
Yeah.
And this, of course, the same studio that recorded Nick Drake. And if you listen to this, it's got that similar thing going on, that similar Nick Drake thing, acoustic guitar and vocal. Absolutely fantastic. Great performance. I love the way he hits the guitar, the tune stuff. And Phil Shackleton tonight played this, and he does a great version of it, actually. Because, of course, he was taught by John Martin, you know, and he used to see. But let's just talk a little bit before we carry on about Hamish Imlach, because Hamish, you know, was a legend in the folk scene, absolute legend. And frankly, before I met Fiona, I hadn't really heard of him because we're not big folkies. But he was described by Ewan McVicar, the Scottish storyteller and singer, as a raconteur who taught Billy Connolly, a singer who taught Christy Moore, a blues guitarist who taught John Martin. And that's Hamish. So, legendary guy.
Check him out. We're going to play some more Hamish on the show, but he is a wonderful character. Do you know what I love about him is that Phil was saying that he took him in as a young lad, really. He was only like 17.
That's right.
And he went up to Scotland, and then so Hamish was cooking in the kitchen, curry, and he was just sat in the living room watching TV, and in rocks John Martin. But they didn't know each other, and he just sat down and he said, hello, hello. And then Hamish came in and said, are you guys met? Yep, we're kidding. Got the beer, whatever. And it was just that. And they used to go off jamming together, and Hamish would be out the front, like, playing the gig, and they'd be nicking out the back playing darts and, you know, just a proper travelling family. I thought it was brilliant. I loved it so much. I love their stories. And you know what really love? What was interesting about John Martin as well, though, is that this album, going back to John, but it marked his evolution from like a talented Scottish folkie to like a genre-busting maverick, because he goes on to, especially with Solidaire, experiment with Echoplex, and you use a tape echo.
I do. An Echoplex.
Echoplex, exactly the same. Yeah. So, and I love that, and I hear you experiment with that, and I just think, but what was lovely is that Eric Clapton, when John Martin got nominated for, he won a Lifetime Achievement Award at the 2008 BBC Folk Awards, Eric Clapton sent a message saying that John Martin was so far ahead of everything else, it was inconceivable.
Noi, Hallo Gallo, from their debut album Noi, released in 1972 on Brain Records, a record label based in Hamburg.
Deutschland.
We're only going an hour from Hamburg when we move.
I know.
Yeah. And produced by the mighty and illustrious Connie Plank.
Great name.
Well, super mega cool, mega with hairy ears producer. He's like super cool.
Is he? You know,
oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, and these dudes, of course, split away from Kraftwerk when they first started. And Klaus Dinger, the drummer.
Great name.
Yeah, great name. And Michael Ruther started this band. And this is basically the two of them with Connie Plank. And what the interesting thing about this, and all Noi's tracks, because unless you really get into Noi, they all sound pretty much the same. But the old, most of them features this famous Motorik beat, which is a repeated 4/4 drum beat with only occasional interruptions, where he's playing all the way through. And he does that all the way through the track. But, you know, there's lovely, there's lovely backward echo there, his guitar.
That texture on that guitar. Yeah. It sounds, it was almost grating me. I wanted to kind of strangle it by the end.
Yeah. You know, the thing is with noise that it's a very, you know, you've got to get into it.
Yeah.
And this whole crowd rock thing, it's a very special genre of music, and it is a genre. It's completely different than everything else, and it does actually, you know, really move along beautifully. And I just love listening. I wouldn't say it's background music, but you can actually put it on and do stuff too, you know.
Yeah.
And it just waves in and out. It's beautiful though. But I love the whole, you know, krautrock idea. I love the fact of Kraftwerk, you know, in their Kling Klang studios in Dusseldorf. And anyway, so they thought we'd play that as we were off to Germany.
I know, it's good, isn't it? Yeah. They sold about 30,000 copies for that with that album. And that's not bad for an underground band, you know. Really good.
It's pretty good. But I'm afraid we're near the end of the show.
Das ist ich, ist. Well, we'll be more fluent. Don't worry, I'm completely bananas and rubbish at it at the moment. Thanks so much for joining us and sharing our musical adventure. And, you can contact us. Please contact us on Instagram or say hello on Facebook or send us an email.
We get a lot of Facebook messages. It's really cool hearing from you.
We do, actually.
You know?
Yeah, it's lovely. Yeah,
a lot of love there. And, no, we're not going to do another hour because we only do Craig. 1 hour and that's
step
it.
Away from the 2 hours, Craig Larson. Anyway, hopefully we'll get to meet Craig Larson in November when he's going to come see us play at the Bury Met when we play with the Starlight Camel Band on the 15th of November.
He's coming over, isn't he?
That's fantastic. I'm really looking forward to meeting him, actually. He's such a support. But he's a really interesting chap as well. Really like his feedback. I love what he has to say.
And also he's a winemaker, which makes him very interesting.
That's got nothing to do with it, Simon Campbell. Nothing that we would have anything in common past. No, actually, it's quite kind of cool that, though, isn't it?
But we're back in the UK pretty soon in May, playing at the Forum, which is the Darlington Blues Club.
Yeah.
May the 15th, is it?
No, it's the 10th. It's Friday the 10th of May.
Ooh. Sugar, right? Okay,
so that's a good job. I do the bookings, isn't it, darling?
That's right. But you can check us out anyway on the band, and I'd just like to dedicate the whole show really to Wilma, who's Fiona's mum, who passed away on Sunday after a beautiful evening and stuff, and Hamish's wife, and apparently she was a lovely lady. We never met, but all our thoughts go out to her family, and music is our life and hers and his.